no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week comes from Box 13. It's The Haunted Artist, their story from December 12, 1948. After that, it's You Are There and The Capture of John Wilkes Booth, their story from June 5th, 1949.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. I don't know whether going after a ghost is your idea of an adventure, but I think I may have one for you. I don't believe in ghosts either. At least, I don't think I do. However, if you're interested, my name is Michael Davis. I'm an artist, and my studio is at 183 Lincoln Mews. I'm there almost all day.
Is it 183 Lincoln Mews? I'm there almost all day and any day. So if you'll drop around, this may be interesting. Michael Davis. So Mr. Michael Davis didn't believe in ghosts. Well, neither did I, until I met Mr. Davis.
Back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, The Haunted Artist.
Ghosts? Gee, Mr. Holliday, are there such things?
Ever see a bank account after March the 15th?
Huh?
Skip it, Susie. Michael Davis.
He says he's an artist.
Do you know anything about art, Susie?
Well, I've been to the museum where they have that statue of the Venus B. DeMille.
That's Venus de Milo.
The one without arms?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Well, art is long and time is fleeting, and the same goes for Dan Holliday. And it looks like a trip to Mr. Michael Davis is in order. See you later, Susie. A half hour later, Michael Davis and I were introducing ourselves and shaking hands. I liked him, and he looked like an artist, except when he grinned. Then he looked and seemed a lot younger than his old 33 or 4. And he grinned as he said...
So you advertise for adventure just to get plots for your stories, huh?
Yes, that's a general idea. Maybe I'll be able to use yours.
Well, this sounds insane, but I think this studio is haunted. Or I am.
Why? Do you hear the patter of cold little feet and the clank of chains at night?
I wish I did instead of... Oh, come and look. You see that easel in the corner?
Mm-hmm.
There's a painting on it. I've got it covered now, but...
But what?
Well, look. Take a good, long look.
I did. What I saw was one of those surrealist things. It was a desert with queer figures raising their arms to a brassy sky and a vicious-looking sun. And somehow it gave me the shivers. I was staring at it when...
Well, Holliday, what do you think of it?
What am I supposed to think of it?
Meaning you don't like it?
Well, I don't know.
I hadn't intended you to criticize it. Just look at it and see if you notice anything wrong. Go ahead, I'll keep quiet.
I looked again, and something did strike me as being a little odd. I moved in for a closer look, stood there for a moment.
Uh-huh. You've got it, Holliday. That stone quarry painted in the right-hand portion of the canvas.
Yes, it doesn't belong. I mean, it's out of place.
I didn't paint it.
Maybe we'd better go over the signals again, Davis. I lost the ball on that play.
I don't blame you. But it's the truth. I did not paint that quarry in there. Look at it. The technique is different.
Yes, the brushwork's not like the rest.
Exactly. And that painting has to be done in 3 days. I've been working on it for 7 months, and it has to be finished.
Why, what's the rush?
Well, I've been invited to hang a canvas in the Bernier Galleries.
Oh, which means you've arrived. Bernier's being taught what the big leagues is to baseball.
Exactly. You see, Holliday... I started the painting 7 months ago. Everything was fine for a time. And to start.
What Davis told me was this. He'd finish work in the evening, cover the painting, and turn in. Then, in the morning, when he'd take the cover off the canvas, the quarry would be painted in. It happened 6 times. The last time was the night before he wrote his letter to Box 13. He was sure no one had entered his studio during the night. He'd locked his windows and doors, but still it happened.
It's driving me crazy. I've lain awake at night trying to catch the person responsible, but nothing doing. He never shows up when I'm waiting for him.
Have you told the police?
Oh, sure. They thought I was just 2 steps ahead of the man in the white coat.
Huh. You're sure you've locked up every night?
Look at the door. New locks, 2 of them. Even the window fasteners are brand new.
Those are the only entrances?
And exits. No, Holiday. No one comes in through the doors or windows. I'll swear to it.
But someone has to, Davis.
Unless I am leaving the rails.
No, I don't think so.
Thanks. Even my best friends won't tell me that.
Well,
Michael, darling, I brought dinner. Oh.
Come on in, Betty.
Here, Mike. Here, take some of these packages.
Here. Betty, this is Dan Holiday. Dan, this is my fiancée, Betty Harper.
Hello, Dan. And my name is Betty.
Well, thanks. I'll use it.
Mike, darling, I've invited Kit and Ann for dinner. Is that all right?
Sure. Will you stay, Dan?
Oh, I'm afraid I can't. Besides, I'm unexpected.
Oh, no. We've got plenty. Spaghetti, salad, wine. Oh, be careful of that bottle, Mike. Here, let me have it. The bag's bursting. Oh,
please, I'm not a child.
That's a matter of opinion. You will stay, won't you, Dan?
Well,
Oh, please do. We can talk some more about my problem.
Problem? Your problem, Mike?
Oh, yes. Dan's going to help about the painting. And I'm a child, huh? There goes the wine.
That was clumsy, wasn't it?
Accidents will happen, Betty. If I can put in that bromide.
Oh, Mike, I just remembered. We're to go to the Suttons after dinner.
Huh? Oh, that wasn't a promise.
We can't refuse them again.
But Dan's gonna...
As a matter of fact, I can't stay anyway. I have an engagement, too.
Well, all right, but you will return tomorrow, won't you?
Sure, I'll be glad to. Good night. Well, well, I like this. It looked good. Especially when Mike's own girlfriend was anxious to deal me out. That Betty didn't want me on the team. As easy to see as the brass button in a collection plate. She didn't drop that bottle of wine. It jumped out of her hands when Mike said I was going to help. Why? Well, I'll have to find that out. I got to my apartment after dinner and sat down to think about it when... Hello?
Is this Dan Holiday?
Yes, it is. Who's this?
Well, never mind. Just a moment.
Hello? Hello?
Holiday, you're to keep away from Michael Davis. Forget the whole thing, understand?
Well, frankly, no. Am I supposed to?
Well, yes. I mean, look here, Holiday. It'll be awkward for you if you continue.
Go on, I'm interested.
All right, just remember what I said. Keep away from Michael Davis or you'll be sorry. Now, listen, this is no joke.
But I'm laughing.
I warn you. Good night.
Brother, whoever you were, that was the worst imitation of a squeeze play I ever heard.
Are you kidding, Dan?
No, someone called me last night, wanted me to keep away from you.
Why, it must have been a joke.
Does anyone want to keep this painting out of the burner galleries for some reason?
I thought of that. You mean sabotage, sort of?
Yeah, that's it. Well, who?
No one I know.
You're sure, Mike?
Of course.
Have you done any work on the canvas today?
Yes, I scraped off the stone quarry and started my own work again.
Then I've got an idea. What time is it?
4 o'clock. Why?
Got any sealing wax?
Sealing wax? Well, no, I haven't.
Well, can you get some?
Well, yes, there's a store a block down the street, but what do you want with sealing wax?
Well, for one thing, we're going to prove there's no ghost.
Or what?
Or that there is one. I'll run down and get the wax.
All right, you're the boss. Make stuff at home. I'll be back in a few minutes.
I worked fast to get the thing done before Mike came back. I took every tube of paint, every brush, every palette I could see and wiped them clean. Then I put them back where they had been. And just in time, Mike came back handing me the sealing wax.
Oh, will this be enough, Dan?
Oh, yes, I think so. Okay. Now we'll lock all the windows. And be sure they're locked.
What are you up to?
You see, we can find out if someone gets in here while you're asleep. We'll seal the locks and bolts with this wax and...
Yes, but wax can be broken.
If it is, We'll know someone came in the windows of the door.
Yeah, but the person could reseal the locks. Sealing wax melts easily enough.
Sure, but he couldn't put the imprint of my signet ring back in the wax without getting the ring from me first. And I'm very fond of this ring. Never take it off my finger. Okay, Mike, let's go to work on the windows. All right, that does it. Both windows sealed. If our ghost gets in now, you'll have to break the wax.
You know, there's only one thing wrong.
What, Mike?
I won't be able to sleep tonight.
Oh, I'll take something. You've got to sleep because your visitor won't break in unless you do.
Dan, suppose those seals aren't broken in the morning, but the painting's been changed anyway. What then?
We both apply for an outside cell. Now, don't do anything more on your painting, and don't touch a thing.
Hmm? Why not?
You want me to help you, don't you?
Certainly.
Then ask no questions and do as I say. And tomorrow morning, we may have an answer. It was 11 o'clock that night before I left Mike's studio. He had taken a sedative and was sleeping like a baby. I turned off the lights, checked the seals in the windows. All okay. I let myself out, tried the door. Locked, but good. Then I took the sealing wax and melted a hunk of it to go over the keyholes. And I pressed my signet ring against the wax. I even forced wax into the crack above the door, initialed that. Michael Davis was sealed in. And whoever, or whatever, was doing the dirty work was sealed out. I hoped. When I got home, I set my alarm for 5 the next morning. Yeah, it went off all right. I stumbled out of my bed, into my clothes, and drove to Davis' studio. I wanted to get there before he woke up. I did, because when I listened at his door, there wasn't a sound. I looked carefully at the seals I'd put there the night before. Well, they were intact. I'll swear to it. Then I rang his buzzer. He was quite a sleeper. Well, he'd taken something and...
Who is it? Why don't you come back in a week?
It's Dan, Mike. Let me in.
Huh? Oh, sure.
Do you always get up this early?
I have a contract with the park commissioners to wake up the birds.
Fine. Shouldn't happen to a vulture.
Sleep all right?
Oh, like a top.
Disturbed at all?
Nope.
Okay, let's look at the seals.
You bet.
Well, this one's all right. So's this one. And the seals on your door were intact, too. Now, take the cover off the painting, Mike.
What if it's been changed again?
If it has, I'll buy you a new hat.
I wear a size 7 3/8. And make it a gray one.
And now back to The Haunted Artist, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, the painting was changed. Davis swore he hadn't done it, and I believed him. But if he hadn't... Okay, there had to be an answer. I took all the tubes of paint, brushes, and palettes with me when I left Davis. Also, the painting itself. I wouldn't tell him why. Lieutenant Kling of police headquarters was more curious.
What are you doing, taking a home course in detective work?
Yes, I'm on my 4th lesson. It's entitled, How to Be a Nosy Cop.
What's the gag, Holliday?
Look, there's no gag. I just left a guy who's biting his nails so badly he was working on his elbow a few minutes ago. Kling... Run fingerprint tests on those tubes and brushes and palettes. Then compare them with the prints on this glass, will you?
Whose glass is it?
Belongs to an artist friend of mine. I swiped it when he wasn't looking.
What have you got in that big package?
A body.
Whose?
All right, it's a painting. And you don't know anything about art.
I knew an artist model once. She wasn't as bad as she was painted. Okay, so I don't slay you.
All right, I'll laugh at your joke. Ha ha. Now, will you do me that favor?
Okay. Fingerprint test in the tubes, brushes, and palette. Compare with prints in the glass, right?
How soon can I have them?
For anybody else, in a half an hour. For you, 3 hours, okay?
Great. Be back in 3 hours. After After leaving Kling, I went to the Star-Times and learned the name of an art expert. An hour later, I showed him Mike's painting.
Hmm, that is quite good. Yours?
No, it's a friend of mine's.
Hmm. Good brushwork. Excellent composition. Wonderful color. And with this? This has no place in the picture.
Look, I've got a lot of things to do. What I want you to do is look at the painting and tell me whatever you can about it. I'll pay you, of course.
Oh, very well. But it will take maybe 2 hours to do a good job. You understand?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll be back in 2 hours. Well, it was a merry-go-round. From Kling to the art expert, from him back to Kling.
A little less than 3 hours, Dan.
Haven't you finished?
Sure. There's your stuff and here's the report. What's the matter with you?
Kling, there's no mistake about this report, is there?
Mistake? Look, Dan, our boy knows his business. Bet on it. Anything you like.
Weren't there any other prints at all?
None. The prints on the paint tubes and the rest of that stuff were the same as on the glass. All from the same person.
But it can't be.
I've got news for you. It is.
Well, the only person who could have touched those tubes and brushes was Davis himself. Yet why should he sabotage his own painting, one that meant so much to him? And yet, he was asleep when it happened. Or was he? I stopped thinking about it then. I had to get back to the art expert and find out something. It was a day of surprises because when I saw him...
Yeah, fine thing. They pushed me and they took your painting.
Who?
I'm standing here looking when they come in. I have no time to see who they are. When who? They pushed me. They grabbed the canvas and they're gone.
Did you call the police?
Yeah, the police come, but I can tell them nothing. Never mind.
Were they men, the ones who took the painting?
One man, one woman.
You're sure there was a woman?
Young man, I'm an art expert, but I also know other things. I know a woman when I see one, even for a second.
All right. Never mind them now. What did you find out about the painting?
Well, not much. I had not much time. But I can tell you this. I think that the right side of the picture was painted by somebody other than the one who painted the rest.
You mean that stone quarry wasn't painted by the same artist who did the rest of the picture?
No, I do not think so. There's a different technique, one that is familiar. And I think I recognize it.
You do? Well, what's his name? The one who painted the quarry.
Well, it's a peculiar technique. Some years ago, I handled some paintings by this man, and...
All right. Who is he?
Luigi Antonetti.
Oh. Where can I get in touch with him?
Well, what?
I want to see him. Where can I reach him?
Oh, you're crazy, young man. Luigi Antonetti is dead.
Oh, that was great. One more twist like that, and I need a corkscrew to take off my hat. There was one person who could answer a few questions for me, Betty Harper. I got her address from Davis and told him to hold base until he heard from me. I guess Betty didn't expect me.
Well, Mr. Holliday, I was just getting ready to go out.
Correction, you just came in. Where's that painting?
Painting? What are you talking about?
Betty, Oh, hello.
Hello.
Kit, this is Dan Holliday. Kit Sayers, Mr. Holliday.
How are you, Holliday?
Oh, that voice. The voice of doom over the phone.
Well, really,
Kit, that was a bad job.
Well,
be quiet, Kit.
Where's that painting?
Now, Mr. Holliday.
You know you've let yourself in for a vacation on the taxpayers' money with that trick?
Now, really, it was a joke, wasn't it, Betty?
Mr. Holliday, Kit really thought he was helping out in a practical joke.
Well, wasn't I?
Look, will you go?
Now, Holliday...
Boo!
All right. But I must say, it all turned out very stupidly.
Okay, Betty. So you've got the painting.
Yes. Now, will you please let me alone? Will you let Mike alone?
Not before I find out what's going on.
What if I told you his career would be ruined? His life ruined, too. Would you still go on?
Maybe I don't believe that.
But you've got to. I love Mike, and I'm trying to help him.
Help him? Look, if Mike doesn't finish that painting, it won't hang in the Berners galleries. What becomes of his career then? You're robbing him of his chance, not helping him.
Then I'll rob him of it. I'd rather do that than...
Then what?
I've said enough. Oh, please, please, you've got to believe me, Dan. All I want is for Mike to be happy.
And all I want to know is what's going on. And what does Luigi Antonetti have to do with all this?
How did you find that out?
It doesn't matter. Is Luigi Antonetti still alive?
He's dead.
And how can he paint that quarry on Mike's canvas?
Get out of here. You get out.
All right, but I'll find out.
If you do, and any harm comes to Mike, I swear I'll kill you.
Now get out!
That was all from Betty. I would have bet my last penny she was doing what she was doing for Mike. But why? Why? Then I got an idea. Find out about Luigi Antonetti. I looked him up. Found out he'd lived in a small town about 250 miles away. He'd painted there. Okay, so I drove to the little town. Sure, I found out. He was dead, all right. I was even shown his grave, and when I looked at it, I wanted to reach back and chip the icicles off my spine. How could a dead man paint? There was only one answer. He couldn't. Then I learned something else. Antonetti had a pupil named Michael Davis. More questions, and finally I found an old school teacher who remembered.
Michael, of course, wonderful boy. Luigi Antonetti taught him painting. He said Michael had a brilliant career ahead of him.
I see. Well, Mr. Evans, do you know what became of Michael?
Well, I think he went to the city, although I haven't heard.
When did he go?
I believe shortly after he graduated from high school. That must be 16 years ago. Yes, it was right after his best friend was killed.
His what?
Yes, poor boy. He fell into the old quarry.
Quarry? Stone quarry?
Well, yes. It was one night after a senior party. I think, yes. Both lads, Michael and Arthur, were in love with the same girl, you see.
Would her name be Betty Harper?
Oh, it's amazing you should know that, yes.
How about this Arthur?
Well, it was quite dark. Arthur, I believe, went back to get something. The bridge across the quarry must have broken. Michael was upset for days, even though Arthur was his rival for Betty.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Evans. You'll excuse me, but I've got to hurry. Yeah, but I had to put more pieces together. So I went back to the city and back to the art expert.
Yeah, it's not only possible, Mr. Holliday, it's quite probable. In his early years, he would use his teacher's technique.
Next stop, psychiatrist.
Certainly, Mr. Holliday, that's quite possible. There are numerous case histories similar to it in General Farm.
Things began to fit together. The different technique, that of a dead man, yet only Davis's fingerprints on the tubes and brushes. Betty's concern and her willingness to see his career stopped rather than have me find out the reasons for everything that happened. But I had to bring the whole thing out in the open. So later in Mike's studio...
Let me get this straight, Dan. You say I'm doing that myself, ruining my own painting?
Yes, you are, Mike.
Don't listen to him, Mike. Now, please don't.
What's the matter with all of you?
Mike, you've got to listen to me.
And he's got to listen to me and Dr. Rawlings.
Why did you bring a doctor?
I'm not only a doctor, Mr. Davis. I'm a psychiatrist.
Are you trying to tell me I'm crazy?
No, of course you're not. But you will be if you don't let us help. Now, listen, you want your career, don't you?
Certainly.
All right, you won't have it if you don't let us help.
It won't be helping. Oh, Mike, send them away, please.
Mike, do you remember a person named Arthur Denning?
Denning? No, I don't.
Now, will you let him alone?
Betty, believe me, this is better for him. Ask Dr. Rawlings. Tell him, Doctor.
I'm sure Mr. Davis has a guilt complex.
Oh, yes.
Unless we find out why, he'll never finish this painting. Perhaps never finish any other.
Why not? What would stop me?
Your own mind, Mr. Davis.
Mike, you know as well as I that no one came into your studio the night we sealed it up. No one. You were the only person in here. Now, do you see?
Not quite. What do you want me to do?
Dr. Rawlings told Mike what had to be done. Davis agreed. It took only a few seconds for Rawlings to inject a drug into Davis's arm. Then we waited until...
All right, he's under. You asked the question, Mr. Holliday.
Mike, can you hear me?
Yes.
Now listen, Mike. It's 16 years ago. You're in high school. A senior. There's a senior party. It's night. Remember?
Yes. It's dark.
Who's with you, Mike?
Betty and Arthur.
What happened that night, Mike?
I killed Arthur.
Mike, no.
Be quiet. How did you kill him, Mike?
He had to go back for something. I told him to take the shortcut over the quarry.
Then what happened?
I forgot.
You forgot what?
The bridge. The bridge was broken. It was dangerous. But I forgot. I wouldn't have sent him.
Yes, I know. He was killed, wasn't he?
Yes. I loved Betty. So did he. Everyone would have said I killed him. But I didn't. I didn't. I just forgot about the bridge. I didn't mean...
All right, that's all.
I thought he did it deliberately.
You see, Miss Harper, his conscious mind refused to admit his guilt, so he forgot completely. His conscious mind forgot to protect him from the terrible feeling of guilt.
But ultimately it came out. He learned painting from Luigi Antonetti 16 years ago. So it was natural at first that he used Antonetti's style, technique. Then, 16 years later, his mind goes back into the past, controls his hand, and he paints as he did 16 years ago. But he paints that quarry, the quarry which was associated in his mind with his guilt, or what he thought was his guilt.
And now? What about now?
Now, when he wakes up, we'll tell him and he'll be all right. For good.
Show have come several new painters of distinction. Not the least of them is Michael Davis, whose intensity of feeling and whose brilliant...
That's good enough, Susie. Well, looks like he's all right, doesn't it?
Gee, isn't the human mind wonderful?
Well, that depends on which way you look at it.
Uh-huh. I was psychoanalyzed once.
Oh? And what did you find out?
We've got a lot of mail to open, Mr. Holliday.
Oh. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Watch for him in his latest picture, Saigon. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville with an original story by Russell Hughes and original music composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. That of Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. Production is supervised by Vern Carstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood.
This is Don Hollenbeck at the War Department in Washington. The Secretary of War has just released the following statement this 26th of April, 1865, and I quote it, "The War Department has received an unconfirmed report that John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of President Lincoln, is in the vicinity of Fort Conway, Virginia. Lieutenant Baker and Colonel Conger, two of the ablest agents of the United States Detective Bureau, have been rushed to Fort Conway with a detachment of cavalry, signed Edwin M. Stanton," unquote, and end of statement. Fort Conway is about 50 miles directly south of the nation's capital in Confederate territory. It's a small town on the north bank of the Rappahannock
River. April 26, 1865. Wanted, dead or alive, John Wilkes Booth.
The most tragic manhunt in the history of the United States approaches its grim climax. CBS takes you back 84 years. The Civil War has ended. President Lincoln has been assassinated. North and South alike, shocked and appalled, wait for the capture of the man who killed him. Wait for the end of a bitter calamity. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there...
You are there.
You are there. Produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now...
Washington, a coroner in the War Department... And Don Hollenbeck.
Today, it may see the capture of the well-known actor who only 12 days ago stole into a box at Ford's Theater here in Washington, fired a ball into the head of President Lincoln and escaped. John Daly and Ned Kellner are in the area of Fort Conway. They've been covering the manhunt with a CBS mobile unit, and we expect to hear from them momentarily. There have been charges that the federal government has been lax in its efforts to capture Booth. Charges that Lincoln's assassination is part of a conspiracy that reaches high into the government. In the face of those charges, Secretary Stanton and the entire War Department are exerting their utmost efforts to end this manhunt, and today may see the break they've been waiting for. Quincy Howe has had a chance to weigh the possibilities inherent in the report that John Wilkes Booth is in Port Conway, so here is Quincy Howe.
Let me emphasize first that we have no confirmation yet for the report that John Wilkes Booth is in Port Conway, Virginia. During the past 12 days, we've had rumors that Booth was in Pennsylvania, that he was on board ship going to Europe, that he was in Maryland, in Canada, in Mexico, in fact, practically everywhere on the North American continent. But all these rumors, when nailed down, proved to be false, even fantastic. If, however, this report proves true, then the question arises, can Lieutenant Baker and Colonel Conger get to Port Conway in time to catch Booth? Never forget this. Booth is not standing still. He's desperate. He's on the move. The farther south he goes, the safer he becomes. Even suppose Baker and Conger do reach Port Conway before Booth gets out. Will they be able to capture him? Remember, they're in Confederate territory. Will a hostile population reveal Booth's whereabouts? And finally, how will these two detectives from the north stack up against the Confederate guerrillas? Although General Lee's army surrendered some days ago, many Confederate batteries have not yet stopped fighting. Mosby's brigade, for instance. Just a minute. John Daly and Ned Calmer are already in Port Conway, Virginia. Go ahead, Port Conway.
This is John Daly. John Wilkes Booth is in this vicinity. He was here in Port Conway yesterday afternoon. May still be here now. Lieutenant Baker, the detective in charge of this searching party, told me that much a moment ago. Our CBS mobile unit is at the dock of the Port Conway ferry, and Lieutenant Baker is inside the ferryman's shack questioning him. Ned Calmer has been given permission to go inside, and the moment anything develops, he'll come out and tell us. To piece together the story of what happened when the cavalryman got here, I've asked one of these young cavalrymen to talk with us. His name is Tom Williams. He's a sergeant. His home is in Yonkers, New York. Tom, you fellas rode into town about an hour ago. What happened when you got here?
Well, as soon as we got in town, Lieutenant Baker and Colonel Conger started asking everybody we passed if they'd seen Booth anywhere around here. Nobody said they didn't. I don't know whether they were lying or not. But they just kept on stopping and asking people. And finally, down the road a ways, we stopped an old colored fella, and Lieutenant Baker showed him some pictures of Booth and the other fella, Harold, who's supposed to be with him. And
you mean Davy Harold, the stable boy who helped Booth escape from Washington?
Yeah, Harold, that's him. And this old colored fella said he'd seen him and Booth here in Port Conway yesterday. He said Booth stopped and asked him if there was a ferry across the river, and he told him how to find it. Well, when we heard that, we rode up here to the ferry on the double.
Well, Tom, what cavalry regiment is this that you're with?
We're a detachment from the 16th New York.
Did you volunteer for this mission?
No, we were detailed.
Any particular reason?
I guess because we're sharpshooters.
Oh, I see. Then are your orders to shoot Booth on sight?
No, we'll shoot if we have to, but our orders are to try to take him alive.
Do you think you're going to get him, Tom?
Sure, we'll get him. Nobody can do what he did and get away with it.
Well, Tom, if you fellas do capture Booth, do you think you'll get part of that $100,000 reward?
I don't know about that. The only thing is, we got to get him, that's all.
All right, thank you, Tom.
Sure.
There's still no word as to what is happening inside that shack where they're questioning the man who runs the ferry. Here beside me now is another man here in Port Conway. He's Mr. Harry Murdoch. Mr. Murdoch, you're not a Virginian. You don't live here in Port Conway, do you?
Oh, no. I'm a Yankee from Chicago.
How do you happen to be here in Port Conway?
Well, I just happened to be in the vicinity, and I heard the report that Booth was supposed to be around here, so I came to scout around.
What do you think? Will they find Booth here?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know. I have a hunch he's not around here. This whole thing is just another wild rumor.
Oh?
Yes. I've been trying to tell Lieutenant Baker that, but he won't pay any attention to me.
Well, what do you do, Mr. Murdoch? Your occupation?
I'm a private detective. Murdoch Bureau of Investigation.
I see.
286 Wabash Avenue, Chicago.
Yes, well, the government has complained that you private detectives have been giving them false clues and wrong leads to deliberately throw them off Booth's trail.
Well, that's not true. Oh, there may be one or two unscrupulous operators in the field, so it's a case of the innocent being condemned to the guilty.
Well, I don't suppose, Mr. Murdoch, that with $100,000 reward at stake, you'd mind getting Booth first, would you?
Why, sure, that's only natural. But I'm trying to do everything I can to help the government.
Uh-huh.
I'm sincere about this. That's why I've been trying to tell Lieutenant Baker that he won't find Booth in this neck of the woods.
Well, Mr. Murdoch, where do you think Booth is hiding?
There's no doubt about it. He's over in Lower Maryland. He could hide in that swampland for years and they'd never find him.
Well, if you think Booth is in Maryland, what are you doing here?
Oh, as a matter of fact, I'm on my way to Maryland. I'm just passing through.
I see.
I saw the cavalry ride in, and I don't want them to lose time here when they could be somewhere else.
Yes.
See, I'm a very sincere...
Excuse me, Mr. Murdoch. They're coming out of the Theremin shack. One or two of the soldiers have just come out. And here come Baker and Conger. They have the ferryman with them. Baker has his revolver jammed into the ferryman's back. Lieutenant Doherty has called in the sentries. He's ordered the men to get ready to move on. Here's Dick Palmer.
Wilkes Booth is not here in Fort Conway. He's somewhere across the river. He's heading south toward a town called Bowling Green. The ferryman here, his name is Rollins, took Booth and Harold across the river late yesterday afternoon. The ferryman said that two Confederate soldiers crossed with Booth and Harold, and he said he heard the actor boast to the soldiers that he had assassinated President Lincoln. The ferryman also revealed that Booth must have hurt his leg. He's hobbling on a homemade crutch. His leg is wrapped in an old muddy bandage. Also, Booth has shaved off his mustache. Lieutenant Baker sent this information from the ferryman at the point of a drop. And now the cavalrymen are going to cross the river. They're getting their horses aboard the ferry boat. They're going after Booth in the direction of Bowling Green. And John Daly and I are going with them. So now back to Don Hollenbeck in Washington.
And so the manhunt goes on. Lieutenant Baker has definitely picked up Booth's trail now, but Booth is 24 hours ahead of the cavalry. And the question is whether Booth is in Bowling Green now, and if he is, why? There's perhaps one person in the country who might know the answer to those questions. Doug Edwards is with him in New York, so over to Doug Edwards.
I'm in the home of the distinguished actor Mr. Edwin Booth here in East 19th Street, New York. Mr. Edwin Booth is a brother of the hunted John Wilkes Booth. Mr. Booth, before any questions are put to you, is there anything you'd like to say?
Mr. Edwards, when a nation is overwhelmed with sorrow by a great public calamity, the mention of personal grief would, under ordinary circumstances, be an intrusion. But under those by which I am surrounded, I hope that a word from me will not be so regarded. It has pleased God to lay at the door of my afflicted family the blood of our deservedly popular president. Crushed to earth by this dreadful event, I am sensible that other mourners are in the land. To them, one and all, go forth our deep, unutterable sympathy, our abhorrence and detestation of this most foul and atrocious crime.
Mr. Booth, do you know of any special reason why your brother should go to Bowling Green?
I don't know, Mr. Edwards. John was very popular wherever he played in the South. He had many friends there. But I know of no reason for him to go to Bowling Green, except the hope that some of his Confederate friends might offer him sanctuary.
Mr. Booth, would you tell us something about your brother? Many of us have seen him in the theater, but what is he like off the stage?
John was a wild, scatterbrained sort of boy, quite impulsive and theatrical. John is vain, self-conscious, too handsome for his own good, hot-tempered. Yet I've known him to be kind, gentle, full of fun, and I was happy that he was my brother. He was always his mother's darling, and this has crushed her heart and spirit.
Mr. Booth, do you have any idea why your brother killed President Lincoln?
He was insane. Insane on the subject of Lincoln. John's sympathies were always with the South, and he blamed Lincoln for all the South's troubles. I recall the day I told him I had voted for Lincoln. He flew into an insane rage and screamed at me that Lincoln wanted to be king of America. I imagine that the news of Lee's surrender drove his mind beyond the limits of reason.
Mr. Booth, somewhere in Virginia, at this very moment, they may be capturing your brother. Have you any comment to make?
I am sure that God will not permit him to go unpunished. He is my brother, but it is far better that he be dead than prolong this shame and humiliation by a public trial.
Thank you, Mr. Booth.
There is something I would like to add, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Booth, say anything you like.
I would like to say, for my mother and sister and my two remaining brothers and myself, that we pray that our loyalty as citizens will be judged by the record of the past. For our present position, we are not responsible. For the future, I shall carry a heavy heart, an oppressed memory, and a wounded name. Dreadful burdens. To a too welcome grave.
Thank you, Mr. Edwin Booth. You mentioned that there are other mourners in the land. Some of them, at this moment, are in Little Falls, New York, waiting for the lonesome train. The train carrying the late President Lincoln to his last resting place in Springfield, Illinois. Ken Roberts has been on that train since it began its sad journey. We take you to him now, aboard the lonesome train at Little Falls, New York.
The lonesome train is on a siding a few hundred yards up the track from the depot here at Little Falls, New York. It stopped a moment ago to take on water. Soldiers are standing at attention alongside of each car, and on the ground, in the gloom, are a handful of people, men and women. This lonesome train has passed through many of the great cities and heard the eulogies of high dignitaries, but here, behind these sad faces, are the farmers, the shopkeepers, the little people of whom Lincoln himself was one. They're standing here silently, their eyes running the length of this dimly lit six-car train, always pausing at the third car, which they know holds the casket of their beloved late president. There's the train bell warning that we'll be moving in a minute. Now the soldiers of the honor guard are climbing back up into the cars, and this funeral train is about to continue its lonesome journey westward. Someone has begun to sing. Spontaneously, simply. It's the battle hymn of the Republic. Now others are joining in. Let's listen. CBS Mobile Unit in Virginia.
This is Ned Chalmer. Lieutenant Baker and the cavalry detachment rode into Bowling Green 20 minutes ago. They found out that one of the Confederate soldiers who came across the Fort Conway Ferry with Booth is here at the town hotel now. The soldier's name is Willie Jett. Booth and Harold raving with him. We're outside the hotel now waiting. John Daly is inside with Lieutenant Baker. The cavalry have the hotel completely surrounded. And now some of the townsfolk of Bowling Green have wandered up here to the hotel to see what's going on. Most of them have just put on a coat or a pair of pants over their nightclothes. Here's John Daly coming out again. I'll turn the microphone over to him.
Booth is not here. He may be at a place called Garrett's Farm, a few miles up the road, the farm we passed on the way down here to Bowling Green. Lieutenant Baker got that information out of Willie Jett, who is here at the hotel. Jett said he left Booth and Davy Harold at Garrett's Farm last night. Lieutenant Baker has placed Jett under arrest. He's being taken along to point out the Garrett Farm. We're going there now, so back to Don Hollenbeck in Washington.
It begins to appear that Booth is getting help from some Southerners, and the big question now is the attitude of the entire South. How far will it go to help Booth escape? There's one man who might speak for the South. He's the former president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis. Mr. Davis is in the custody of federal troops in Irwinsville, Georgia, but he's consented to make a statement. So we switch you now to Irwinsville, Georgia, and CBS correspondent Arthur Hannis.
Mr. Davis, what is the South's feeling about the assassination of President Lincoln by John Wilkes Booth?
I would like to say, have it fully understood, that the South does not, nor will it ever condone this cowardly, villainous act of John Wilkes Booth. I'll give you my assurance that the assassination of Lincoln was not plotted, nor given implement or comfort by any member of the Confederacy. History will prove that it was a conspiracy of certain congressmen to dispose of Abraham Lincoln and place a man of their choice in his place. All decent and honorable people in the southern states are shocked. Shocked by his murder. Booth is no hero to us. He will be no martyr to the Confederacy. He will receive no welcome among the gentlemen and women of the South.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson Davis. John Daly and Ned Kellner have reached Garrett's Farm, so we switch you to our mobile unit somewhere near Bowling Green, Virginia.
This is John Daly. The cavalrymen have surrounded the barn here at Garrett's Farm. It's a small barn, only about 20 by 30 feet. Booth and Davy Harold are almost certainly in there. They were locked in by the young Garrett boys who were afraid they might steal their horses. When the cavalry came up, they roused the Garrett family and quickly found out that the two men Willie Jett had brought to the farm were still here. Lieutenant Baker has ordered young Garrett to open
you,
the barn door. Now Lieutenant Baker is speaking.
Inside the barn! Come out! Do you hear? Come out! Give yourselves up, or we'll set fire to the place and burn you out! Who are you? And what do you want?
That was a voice from inside the barn, a man's voice calling out, "Who are you and what do you want?" It may have been Booth's voice, if he is inside.
Who we are. We have 50 armed men here. You have no chance to escape.
More than 19. He seems to be giggling strangely and fumbling. Colonel Conger, who is it? Is it Harold?
It's Harold, all right. Booth is probably still in the barn.
Is Booth in the barn there with you?
Yes. But I didn't do nothing. Honest, I always liked Mr. Lincoln's jokes. Honest, I swear, I didn't do nothing.
Take him over there by the house. If he moves, shoot!
As you can hear, Baker is calling into the barn again, and for the first time he has addressed Booth by name.
We We know you're in there. Come out and surrender.
Handfuls of it, pushing it in through the cracks of the barn. Evidently more straw inside. One of the soldiers has just thrown a torch into this dry brush. It blazes up quickly. And now I can see a red glow inside the barn. It's getting brighter in there as the fire starts to take hold. Yes, I can see Booth in there. I can see him clearly through the cracks. I'm only a few yards away from where he is. The fire is lighting up the whole inside of the barn, almost like day. Yes, I can see Booth standing there, leaning on his crutch. His rifle in his hand, and now he's looking back at the flames behind him. He's limping up towards the door. I think he's coming out. Go ahead, John Daly.
The door is opening. Yes, it is opening. And John Wilkes Booth is now standing there defiantly, silhouetted against a background of flame, but now he's gone behind the door just a step. I can't see. There's a shot. A shot. Booth has fallen to the floor of the barn. Maybe he shot himself. He said he'd never be taken alive. Baker and Conger have just rushed into the barn, and the barn is an inferno. It's going up quick. The dry brush has sent the dry wood afire, and flames are climbing up into the sky, but they're carrying Booth out now, taking him a little ways up from the barn. Hey, let me through here.
Stand down!
God won't let me through. A man is blocking my way. Booth is lying on the ground about 15 feet away. He's not dead, but he seems to be in agonizing pain. Blood is running down the back and side of his head. Baker and Conger are bending over him. His lips are moving. He's having difficulty breathing. And now Lieutenant Baker has gotten up. He's coming over this way.
Lieutenant Baker! Lieutenant
Lieutenant Baker! How bad is Booth?
He's dying. We can't save him.
Joe, get the crowd over here.
Lieutenant, I saw his lips move. What did he say?
He said, tell my mother I died for my country.
He was shot in the head, wasn't he?
Yes, behind the ear. In almost the identical spot he shot Lincoln.
But was he shot by one of your men, or did he shoot himself?
I don't know. That's what I'm going to try to find out now.
All right, Joe.
Wait a minute.
Lieutenant, are you certain that it's really Booth?
Of course it's Booth. Harold said Booth was in the barn with us. Besides, I've identified him positively.
You just heard Lieutenant Baker say, without qualification of any kind, that the dying man is John Wilkes Booth. No one around here seems to be very happy. There's no anger, no spirit of revenge. There just seems to be a sense of a grim job that had to be done.
April 26, 1865. John Wilkes Booth, the man who shot Lincoln, is captured and dies.
You have been listening to The Capture of John Wilkes Booth, another broadcast in the series You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne. The Capture of John Wilkes Booth is written by J. Franklin Jones. Edwin Booth was played by Richard Waring, John Wilkes Booth by Scott Scottsworth, and the cast included John Sylvester, Raymond Edward Johnson, Charles Webster, Matt Crowley, Guy Sorrell, James Dobson, and others. Next week,
January 7th, 49 B.C., Caesar at the Rubicon. You are there.
Tonight, the Hit Parade on Parade comes marching to CBS to take over the Jack Benny spot for the summer. The Hit Parade on Parade brings you specially modernized versions of the highlights of the Hit Parade's outstanding programs of the past. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for the Relic Radio Show this week. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Box 13, You Are There, past episodes of this podcast, alongside all the others at RelicRadio.com. There's also thousands of other old-time radio episodes for you to listen to there, and our Shoutcast stream with even more. If you'd like to help support it all, give that donate button a click or visit donate.relicradio.com. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.